Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And today, Samoa Joe returns to TIJ, and he's officially with the WWE main roster. He's going to talk all about his journey to the WWE, from his TNA departure, which is when we spoke to him last time, to signing with NXT, to finally making his WWE debut. He's got some tremendous stories about his first day at WWE TV. He's also talking about his days at the Inoki Dojo in Los Angeles, where he helped out, and when he worked with Shinsuke Nakamura in the early days of his career, taking him out to the bar to have a couple beers. Joe also brought TJ Perkins and Daniel Bryan to the dojo as well. Samoa Joe, he's also a huge Godzilla fan, which I love. And he's also the only WWE wrestler that's Samoan that's not related to all the other Samoans. And he's coming up, but first we're going to talk about another training facility and performance center, not just the Inoki Dojo. I want to talk about the DDP Yoga Performance Center in Smyrna, Georgia, which is where we just filmed the new Fozzy video, by the way, and you're going to love it. It comes up very, very soon. But DDP's performance center is state-of-the-art. You don't have to live in Smyrna to enjoy all the benefits of DDP Yoga. You can get the DDP Yoga Now app and do live workouts from the performance center wherever you happen to be. And I can't say it enough, DDP Yoga is an amazing program that truly gets results. And that's probably because it's so much more than just a workout. It's a path to healthier living. You got the actual workouts, which you can do anywhere right from your smartphone or tablet, thanks to the DDP Yoga Now app. He's giving you nutrition tips, cooking tips, a way to track your progress. He's also loaded up his own brand of motivation that you can access anytime on the app. And right now, he's also giving you 20% off the DDP Yoga Now app and all DDPY-related merch when you go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. You guys have heard me talk about what DDP Yoga has done for me. And I'm going to be doing DDP Yoga on the upcoming Judas Rising tour. You know, I love to do that when I'm on the Fozzy tour bus, when I'm backstage in the dressing room. It keeps me nimble. It keeps me sane. I love DDP Yoga, and that's why I have the app on my phone, so I can do DDP Yoga anytime, anywhere, any place, on the bus, backstage at the venue, in my hotel room, outside on the front lawn, whatever. I just open up the app and get to work. So take advantage of the deal that DDP is offering. 20% off the DDP Yoga Now app and all related merch at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. That's 20% off hats, t-shirts, heart monitors, yoga mats, so much more. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. That's ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Get in the best shape of your life physically and mentally and do it today.
Talk is Jericho.
Okay, so I usually didn't have any small talk today with Samoa Joe,
no,
the returning Samoa Joe, because
small talk, do we?
You had the same problem
that I had
here in Champaign, Illinois. Explain your issues.
There's this, I think the best description is a son of a bitch security guard who's at the top of the ramp there, and he takes his job very seriously. Mm-hmm. I will give that to him. A little too seriously. Would not allow any of the cars to pass his magic gates.
Now, let me add to this.
Please, do a little scenario.
Dozens, possibly 100.
Probably 100.
Screaming fans.
Right at the gate.
Right at the gate. So as soon as you pull up at the top of the ramp, there's a gate.
Yeah.
And he's in his little toll booth wheelie. I'm coming out of the booth.
Coming out of the booth.
So when you stop, everyone's chanting hey, Samoa Joe, or Y2J. And so this guy comes over.
Yeah.
I roll my window down. He's like, yes.
Chronic smoker.
Old, right? I'll say he could be about old as fuck.
Yeah.
He looked like he was probably 60, but looked like he was 70 or 80.
Yeah.
With the bad teeth and just the wrinkled, leathery skin.
Yeah.
And
he's made some bad life choices.
He has. And one of them not letting us in, because he's like, can I help you? And I'm like, yeah. He goes, you're a wrestler? I'm like, it would appear so, as people are chanting Y2J.
Yeah.
A little girl's trying to get to the car to get an autograph.
Joe is going to kill you was it was sung in a manner close to a choir hymn.
Right.
In my background, as the guy came up and asked me, "So you're a wrestler, right?"
But then he goes, "You know, do you have a pass?"
Yeah.
Now I don't know if I was absent that day. From WWE.
I went to
school.
A few orientations. I don't remember this part of the course.
Never
either.
Once.
Yeah.
Ever have we ever been issued any sort of pass?
Yeah.
Which would sell me to say, "We don't have passes." He goes, "You need a pass." I'm like, "No offense, sir, but the people here, it's obvious I'm a wrestler. I'm not lying to you."
Yeah.
They're cheering and chanting and screaming. And then he goes, "Well, you got to hold on. I don't know if there's any room down there now." So then he goes back to his little toll booth, Willie booth. Yeah. And then he checks and is like, opens the gate. I drive down. There's nothing but room. There's
thousand. It is a spacious
open space area, garage. So how did he finally let you down?
So I had driven up and he had kind of given me the same. And I was actually one of three cars stacked up at the gate.
Okay.
And a few of the baby faces were being quite living up to their moniker, I guess, and going out there. And you know, they had to meet the fans.
So they're shaking hands.
You know, and kissing babies and all that good stuff. Thankfully, I despise everybody, so I did not have that same affliction. But, he kept us up there, and finally he's like, "Well, I need to get on the walkie-talkie." And I go, "Well, get on the walkie-talkie right now. I don't think there's a limit on use of the walkie-talkie. I don't think you have any minutes you're burning there, buddy."
Yeah. I've got limited minutes on this walkie-talkie.
And my passenger, exclaimed. I won't say he didn't shout, but he exclaimed. He goes, "Come on, man, this is ridiculous." And he exclaimed it in kind of a general tone, to which he snapped back in a very harsh, hostile tone. He was like, "Wah, la, la," and he started kind of yelling. And I stopped him halfway. I go, "Listen, you don't need to yell. There's nobody yelled at you, and I think you're being a little ridiculous right now. And you know, I think we're gonna take a little break here. We're gonna calm down a little bit." I go, "Why don't you go into your booth, his magical booth, and why don't you call down there and let's see what the situation is. I think you can be pretty proactive on this and try to get us down there as quickly as possible." And inevitably, I think he kind of gave in and realized he was being a little bit ridiculous.
And once again, I mean, nothing against the fine people of Champaign, Illinois.
No.
We're in Champaign, Illinois. We're not trying to get into Fort Knox.
No.
It's an arena.
If Fort Knox is looking for a security guard, I know the guy they need to hire. It's this guy. Because if he guards the Champaign loading dock as well as he does Fort Knox, this country's not losing any gold.
We got it. And that's the thing. It's like he's acting like he's doing us a favor by letting us down. And once again, like
this special double secret security clearance.
People here cheering, you know. Yeah. I heard a story once where Nico McBrain, the drummer of Iron Maiden, pulled up to like the PNC Arts Center, like an amphitheater, and they wouldn't let him in because he didn't have a pass. So he just started driving and basically ran the
checkpoint.
Ran the checkpoint person over and had to like go to court and all that stuff. But I can understand. I wanted to run this guy over, except for he was too busy in his booth not letting me in.
I wouldn't have, just because I figured he's bound to go any minute. I just was letting him live out his last days.
He doesn't have a lot of time left, so let him.
In fact, the only thing that really froze me there was because I was like, this guy has seen some stuff. He's just he's been around so long. I almost don't want to mess with him.
Maybe he's having like a Led Zeppelin flashback from the 70s when he was guarding Madison Square Garden or something, you know. But it's great that you're we're here in Champaign, Illinois with Shmo Joe is actually here on the main roster in the WWE. And the last time we spoke, which was at my house a couple years ago,
I think it was pre-WWE.
You had just left TNA, and then kind of the world was your oyster.
Yeah.
Not sure exactly what you were going to do.
Yeah.
And now you're finally here.
Yeah, it's crazy how that worked out.
Because it first started out with you getting signed to NXT as just an NXT guy?
I think the initial idea was, let's just bring him in just for NXT. And we got such a good response with everything, and that it kind of really blew up beyond that, and you know, here I am in the main roster.
But why would it only be just for NXT? Because let's face it, I mean, Samoa Joe, pretty big name, great worker, proven money draw, one of the few in TNA. What was the hesitation to just have you come up instantly?
I think it was a cultural thing here in WWE.
How do you mean?
I think that for a long time, kind of past TNA projects that they had brought in hadn't done well. And I think there was a major push in the company that says, like, we're going to build guys from scratch on our own. They had put a tremendous amount of money into the PC and the Performance Center, which is, you know, producing great talent.
Right.
So, you know, it was kind of like, you know, hey, this is a guy who can help us build NXT into a brand, but maybe not necessarily be something that, and really, I mean, I guess, you know, to the company's credit, it wasn't something that was kind of set in stone. It was just kind of like the scenario that was laid out before me was like, listen, we can use you here in NXT, but we don't really think that it'll go much beyond that.
Hmm.
And but at the same time, you know, it's kind of a little bit of self, like having enough confidence in yourself, knowing that, yeah, you're going to let me NXT and trust me, I'll show you why.
Right.
Work on a bigger stage. So, yeah, I really wasn't worried, you know, like it was kind of a foot in the door deal. And, I had a lot of good people rooting for me at the time. So,
I think the same thing happened with Kevin Owens when he first came in there. He was told the same thing, like, you know, we're bringing in NXT, but there's no promises you're going to make it to the main roster. But
yeah.
Obviously, you know how good you are and what you can do. So.
Yeah. And I think that's the biggest thing is like, I don't mind being underpromised. I really despise being overpromised. Mm. And I think people who have had that happen to them can really appreciate that in their career. Cause, you know, you'll work for people or you'll work with people who will sit there and they will, you know, promise you the world and they can't deliver. So if you underpromise, it's almost as if, hey, listen, this is what I can give you, but anything over that, you know, you're kind of overachieving in a sense.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, and that was definitely my relationship with Hunter when he first asked me to come in, was that, you know, he didn't promise me anything.
Mm-hmm.
It, very, very, very little, as a matter of fact. But as I kept going to NXT and kept working with the company and having a pretty good relationship with the company, it grew beyond that. So I mean, I can appreciate that.
Did he call you or were you calling?
It was kind of a series. It was weird. It was it was definitely like kind of something that kind of happened through a network. I think the first contact I made was I had dropped Paul Heyman a message on Twitter and like, you know, I've known Paul for a good number of years and I just said, hey man, you know, I'm not on paper anywhere and just wanted to pick your brain and see what you thought, you know, how, you know, about some of the things that I thought I could do and how I should proceed. And, you know, immediately Paul, if you know Paul, you went right into action. You know, oh, you know, who's
Samoa Joe.
Yeah.
You're one of the greatest talents Paul, of your generation or any other.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, Paul went into overdrive and from there, like I didn't really have a lay of the land as far as who was in the office, who headed up talent relations, who was even doing anything over here anymore, because I'd just been so disconnected for about a decade, you know, just really kind of word of mouth hearing so-and-so. But, I you know, like I said, I didn't know who the head of TR was. I didn't know who, you know, called the shots anymore because things had changed so drastically within the 9 years that, you know, I'd kind of been with TNA. And, you know, it's like, well, who do you know? And I think my next conversation was Joey Mercury, who kind of contacted me. He was like, hey, man, are you done, you know, with TNA? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've known Joey for years, you know, back when I was in ROH. And from there, Road Dogg and a bunch of other guys. And I think enough people got in Hunter's ear where he was just like, well, you know, let's have a meeting and let's talk about it. So we set a meeting and sat down, talked about it, and it kind of went from there.
Because this was before AJ had come.
Yeah, well before AJ, well before anybody had come. And, you know, it was really kind of in a way, it was kind of like new ground for the company and for me, and nobody really who was in my position had made overtures to the company.
Mm-hmm.
And really they kind of like written a lot of us off I don't think it was out of malice or spite. I think it was just, they had an edict they wanted to follow and I get that, but you know, it wasn't something that they thought it was a possibility. But I think Hunter kind of saw the possibility that a lot of other people didn't, and it kind of started from there.
Yeah, because you kind of had the TNA stamp.
And that was the thing. You know, I think they didn't want to sit there and rely on people who had done things in other places. They wanted people to be built and made in the realm of WWE, which, you know, like I said, I can understand it. You know, I may have not necessarily agreed with it, but I could get where they were coming from.
It has kind of changed over the years now, because the last couple of years especially,
absolutely,
where they have gone and gotten guys.
AJ, The Club.
Sure. Kevin,
Bobby
Sammy.
Bobby Roode, Kevin, Sammy.
Seth,
yeah.
You know, all those guys. Yeah, Bobby, yeah. Eric Young, all those kind of guys, right?
So it's, yeah. So, I mean, it's, the edict has definitely been modified and adjusted, and if I help to do that, then that's awesome.
When you first go to NXT, and is it like, are you working the Largo shows and those type of shows?
No. Originally, I remember my first meeting with Hunter. I think one of the first things out of the mouth was like, hey, listen, I'm not going to sit here and pay you to train. which, you know, I got it. You know, I you know, and I think I would have just, you know, because I believe in showing good faith.
Right.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think if you believe that you're good enough to do something, you don't sweat the small stuff. And that was small stuff, you know. And it was literally like, oh, you know, hey, listen, we got a bunch of road shows coming up. And I think that, you know, he really wanted to keep the buzz about the road shows and going out of Florida, you know, really high. So he, you know, we'll bring you in for those. We'll bring you in for TVs, and you can work wherever else you want.
So you're kind of choosing and picking the
dates. Oh yeah. And it was basically a deal where, like, you know, I kind of gave them my calendar, cleared the dates with them. They got first choice, and then gotcha. I went from there. So it was nice.
So you were working mostly like kind of the out of state shows that were the bigger ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, I mean, and it's funny, 'cause like, and I think you can attest to this too. It's like, you know, I work every other week and got tons of time off, and I make a decent wage. Yeah, yeah. That didn't sound bad to me at all. Like, you know, okay, yeah, I'm in. You know, like,
because they would have like split crews, right?
Yeah. Because whenever we're on the road, they're running, you know, what they affectionately call the Coconut Loop, which is like, you know, around Florida, which I think are awesome shows, because like it's shows where you get to see guys debut and you know, right, start to do their thing, and younger guys and stuff like that. But then, like, you know, as the kind of relationship grew and I signed full time with WWE, like, you know, I had no qualms about like if Bloom or Hunter asked me like, hey, could you work this weekend but work with this specific guy? Like, no way Jose was a guy that they had me work with a lot. And with the idea behind it being, you know, give this guy some big match experience with a talent that's like kind of been there and like work with them. And I had no issue with that whatsoever, because, I mean, he was a guy, him, Mojo, guys like that, who were like putting in supreme effort. So it was like, if I could help that along, like, awesome. Like, yeah, I'll drive over to Largo.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
it makes you more valuable too. And it's kind of one of the reasons why, not so much now, but why you went to NXT is to help kind of the younger guys.
No, and I dug it. 'Cause like, it's different when you have a bunch of like guys with like really bad attitudes. Then I think I'd be like, oh, whatever. But like, these were all guys with like really great attitudes who were like trying to be better and trying to do things and elevate their game and get along. So for me, I think by osmosis, it kind of like charged me up, because it was like that enthusiasm and energy kind of like recharged me. It was like, oh, it's been so long since I've been around this, not the usual grizzled hacks that we all hang out with on a regular basis.
And it was the first time you'd ever been in WWE too, right?
Yeah. And that's kind of like a whole new experience too, because it's a and you can attest to this. It's like this. It's a big operation. It's like with the tons of moving parts, and you know, I think on your first day in WWE, you probably meet 200 people.
Yeah,
like legitimately. Literally, like the first time you walk through the halls in Raw, you're introduced to 200 people, and you hope to remember like four people's names.
Yeah,
and then as the weeks go on, you slowly but surely start to, you know, pick up names, but it's a whole deal, man.
Or you're like me, where 17 years later, you're still not completely sure.
Because
it's not fair, because you get introduced to 200 people and then you don't want to ask them what your name is the next week. So the next
and it know, happens in a day. It's not like some like slow progression of like, oh, and this is Barry and Alan and Steve. Yeah. It's like Barry, in a day, it's like, yeah, this Barry and Alan, Steve, and this so and so and this so and so. Oh, hey, nice to meet you. I'm da da da, and I run this and that. Oh yeah, cool. You know.
Oh yeah, and there's still the guys that are around where I'm like, hey, dude.
Yeah, Chief.
What's up, man?
What's up, buddy? Ah, guy. I haven't seen him forever.
Guy. But that is the case, though. You know, like you said, Matt and Jeff just came back, and Matt, the first day, you know, he was like, they're taking pictures, and they got this, and they're doing merchandise, and he's like, you forget how much of a machine this whole thing really is.
Oh, I don't know how many times I've done that. Like, somebody will come up to me with, like, this really important thing, like, hey, you know, we need shots for this promotional thing, and, if you know, some liners for the international tour, and we'll be over here, and da-da-da, and it's great to see you again. I'll be like, y'all, it's great to see you again, too. And I'll, like, lean over to you or somebody else and be like, hey, who's he again? What is, like,
I don't remember either.
Oh, God, you're the worst.
That's what, like, you know, Elaine's idea that everyone should wear a name tag in Seinfeld.
It's please.
Like, that would be great.
Yeah.
I constantly try to look at guys, like, their credentials.
Their hang tag.
Yeah,
but they put them all cool now. Like, I put them on my waistband.
And
my
dad, they actually have passes. We don't.
Yeah. They with their name on them. Yeah. But of course they've been in the game, so they don't want to wear a lanyard, because that's like, only the nerds wear lanyards. So they got them like clipped to their belt, their waist.
Just clipped to the keys.
Yeah. It looks like I'm staring at everybody's crotch when they're trying to like sneak a look at their name. Hey, what's up there? What are you looking down there? What? What are you talking about?
Talking about,
Steve?
Man.
You're listening to Talk is Jericho.
All right, jumping back in with Samoa Joe. When you first got told you were getting called up to the WWE main roster, was there any talk that maybe you weren't going to be Samoa Joe?
No, no.
That was always the case.
It was always the case. I mean, yeah. And I tell guys too, like I had made the effort before I'd come here to like trademark my name and and everything, which makes the process easier because it's like if I own it, then it's easier for me to lease it to, you know, WWE or let them use it. So guys who don't own their names, you know, I don't care how long you've been under, you don't own your name. You know, it's not you. So.
And they'll take it from you.
Oh, they will. You know, or even like former employers, you know, like I've seen that be an issue where it's just like if, oh, well, that's ours. And it's just like,
yeah.
No, it's not. But
it is kind of rare though. Like, you know, back, you know, 5-10 years ago, you would never get to keep your name when you came here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that was kind of a weird, like first, cause I remember sitting down in the meeting and it was me, Canyon, and a few others, and I think at the end of the meeting, which was good, you know, Canyon kind of mentioned like, hey, what are we going to call him, you know, because he obviously wanted to get to work with the branding department and get everything figured out. And I remember, you know, Hunter kind of turned and goes, Samoa Joe, you know, like,
yeah.
He kind of looked at me, you on it? Yeah, no, Samoa Joe, you know. It was like and I kind of got the logic because it was like, you know, do we spend 5 months trying to rebrand this guy or 5 weeks, however many weeks, trying to brand him, or do we start moving stuff right out the gate and he's branded and ready to go,
especially when everyone knows that name too.
Yeah I have not worked under anything else, so
right, yeah
up to that point. So
if they change the name to like Dax Phoenix,
yeah
it might be hard. Dax Phoenix. I don't know where that came from.
Dax
is gonna kill you.
Dax is like a thing now, like I hear
it's
that
a
now.
Name I know,
yeah,
it's like I know a couple from? Actually know a couple Daxes.
Yeah.
When you were in NXT, who are some of the guys that you like working with? You mentioned No Way Jose. Was there some other guys of that level that you worked with,
like younger guys,
for example, that you think have a chance to do really well?
I mean, Ty Dillinger is definitely one of them, and
just
I think
got called up. Yeah.
Just got called up, and I think I didn't work much with them, but I got to spend a lot of time with them and like kick around ideas. I thought Jordan and Gable, it doesn't surprise me,
right? American
well
Alpha,
yeah. Finn, obviously. I mean, Finn and Nakamura, because they're just both guys that I've known forever.
Yeah, were those guys that you worked with quite a bit?
So I had never worked with Finn, ever. I had never even stepped into a ring with him or wrestled him ever. Outside of maybe something when he was in the LA Dojo, just like a training thing.
The Inoki Dojo?
Yeah.
You were out there too?
Yeah. Well, I opened it. What are you talking about?
Oh, sorry, brother. Calm down.
All right, easy there.
But you guys weren't in New Japan together, though?
No, we weren't. We weren't.
Gotcha.
Because I just essentially worked for Inoki office when I was doing that, which is a whole other weird
Inoki's not hierarchy. In New Japan anymore.
Inoki's not in New Japan, but he runs it, but he doesn't.
And Simon's in there, who's not really his son-in-law.
Yeah,
but
Simon,
he says
he's just... Yeah, it's very
right.
You
so
know,
anyways,
very,
you opened that damn LA Dojo.
Yeah, I opened that thing. Yeah,
and Finn was there.
And Finn was kind of a later acquisition. And I think, and we tell the story of the time. This first step off the plane, they kind of timed it wrong, and I had my wedding that day. And he ended up like walking straight from the plane to my wedding, like, and had a blast. So
there you go.
Fun story. We always kick
nice.
Around.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, great photos from that too. You know.
Oh yeah.
Finn Nakamura.
Because that was the issue. Like I talked to Vince about both those guys,
uh-huh.
about bringing them up a year before they got brought up,
yeah.
Finn being one, and then Nakamura. I remember last summer I went and talked to him about Nakamura. So these guys are down there for way longer than they maybe should have been.
Mm-hmm.
How long were you in NXT for?
I want to say almost close to 2 years.
Okay, so you were down there a long time too.
Yeah. But I think a part of that was too, it was a part about driving the brand, and I think that was kind of the issue with myself, Finn, and Nakamura, was that, you know, we were these kind of mainstays that, you know, it was a touring brand at this point, and it was like, you know, I felt they kind of needed us. Bailey, you know, I think it was another.
She was there a long time too, yeah.
You know, it was what people kind of showed up and paid to see. So, mm-hmm.
So to continue drawing, they needed you guys down there almost.
Until they, you know, like I said, it's a really, I don't envy the job that they have down there, because it's like now we've got it to NXT's at a level now where it is a third touring brand within mm-hmm. the WWE spectrum, and you have to now produce new talent that, you know, have the risk of being gone. I liken it to at times like a Ring of Honor
ECW used to be
an ECW where it's like, you know, you would build these huge stars, but eventually, you know, opportunity comes calling, and now you have to start from scratch.
Especially since NXT, the original idea, I don't want to use the word minor leagues, but it was a feeder system for WWE. But then suddenly it became a viable, like you said, third turnaround. So Joe and Nakamura and Finn are there maybe a little longer than they would have been in the past.
Absolutely.
Because you have to keep drawing.
But I think part of that, too, is I think it's a good... It's a good backstory for a lot of guys too. I think some guys benefit from that time because
being down there,
when you are brought up here, there is more of a familiarity with the at least the more core fan base of WWE, and you can build off of that and kind of take it into Raw and SmackDown. And
now, when you tour with NXT, you guys get like a bus.
Oh yeah, the deal. Like that's I actually remember another conversation where he was like, hey, listen, if you want to drive, we understand, but, we have a bus. If you want to jump on the bus, it's no big deal. I'm like, wait, tour bus? Yeah. Yeah, we take care of the hotels and, so you want to, put me up in really 5-star hotels and put me on a tour bus? I guess. All right. You're twisting my arm here. I'll do it. You win.
Sometimes I see that in the old school grizzled old vet inside me goes, look at these punks, these rookies riding in buses and staying in hotels. They're not learning.
If I was driving like parallel to that, I totally would have been that way. Yeah. But at that point, I was just like, this is comfy. Do they have a DVD player? Blu-ray? All right. Awesome.
Wow, nice. Then you start getting angry. Like, why are you talking about? They don't have Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah, this is ridiculous.
Get out of here. Come on, boo. So that would be like, would you fly into a town and they pick you up at the airport, or do you meet at the gas station?
Directly at the airport. Pick up from the airport, straight to the hotel, to the venue. Yeah, you know the deal. I was about it. I was in.
I wouldn't want to come up here.
Listen. I'm not saying there was apprehension. I was just saying there was a great appreciation for the situation I was in.
Let's talk a little bit about Nakamura, how he's such a phenomenon with his charisma. And the fact that no one has hardly even seen him on the main roster. He's already getting super reactions. He did from the moment he showed up at NXT. Maybe the first of his kind, a Japanese guy coming into America and just having this reaction right off the bat.
I think for that kind of reaction, what he's getting, I think it is for the first time for a Japanese athlete.
I agree.
I think the closest comparison you can make is Muta.
Yeah.
That had like blockbuster success.
That presence.
In the Western world.
Muta always had, like Gary Hart as his manager.
Yeah.
Or something.
He always had a mouthpiece and the mist. And I mean, he just moves cool. But I think that's a lot of that shared with Nakamura, where they just have a very unique body charisma to them, outside of just having the normal charisma. I mean, they communicate so much just with what they do and
his movements.
Yeah, it's just it's the ever-present intangible, and I think that he has it in spades. So
that X factor, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I worked with him last year in Tokyo at the Sumo Arena, and I really enjoyed working with him. He doesn't do a lot. It's all in his body movement, his motion, charisma. He does a lot of knee. Most of his offense is knee strikes.
Yeah.
Which I just really thought, what an easy guy to work with, because he's so over. But what he does looks great.
Yeah.
But I thought, man, this is because you worked with him quite a bit in NXT, right?
A ton.
Maybe even your last match.
And I've known him forever, so it was awesome. Because I mean, prior to him being in NXT, I had known him when he first broke in to New Japan and had just started wrestling, and they had really high hopes for him. I remember, he was kind of like, they used to send over like a class of young boys to train, but then like they had special projects, and the only two special projects that they ever sent over, one was Lyoto Machida, who went on to UFC and champion and has a fantastic MMA career, and the other special project was Nakamura. So they had huge hopes for him, like really, really early on. And it's funny, Inoki has a way of kind of having a feel for guys, and I think that I'm not necessarily that he like scouted him, but I know that when Inoki saw him, he was like, oh yeah, he's one of those special few. So
I think when you've been around a long time, you can start to pick guys out right away.
You can just kind of get that vibe off of them. And I think you and I can, see a guy work or see how a guy carries himself and kind of pick up.
Just know there's something extra there.
There's something there,
Tell me a little more about the Inoki Dojos. I'm assuming that when you meant the special projects, they're sending them from Japan to L.A.
Yeah, yeah.
So were you a trainer there? Or, tell me the whole backstory of that.
The backstory was actually started initially by Justin McCauley, who's an ex-UFC fighter, and Simon Inoki. And they needed a pro wrestling component to it. So I was really good friends with Justin. So at the time he had asked me, he's like, hey, listen, we're building this place out. Can you come on and help out? So I had come on. We had... built this beautiful facility. I mean, honestly, outside of the Performance Center, it was probably the best, training facility. I mean, as far as like what it had and what was going on there, outside of, you know, like I said, the Performance Center. When I get the Performance Center, I was like, all right, that's pretty impressive, you know?
Yeah.
But, from there I had brought in, Ricky Reyes and Rocky Romero. Rocky Romero still works with New Japan, and I brought them in, and TJ Perkins, actually.
Oh, TJ was there too, right? Yeah.
Who kind of was really young in the business, had just getting started out, but I mean, he's a young guy, a lot of promise, and he worked real hard. And then later on, I had asked, I was like, hey, look, we have this awesome guy up north who's incredible, and I think he'd fit in well here. And they go, yeah, bring him in. It was Brian Danielson. Daniel Bryan.
Sure.
But later, to become Daniel Bryan. So
you had worked with him before?
I'd worked a ton with Bryan.
So you're bringing him down to do what? To maybe...
To actually become part of the dojo, because at this time, he hadn't even worked in New Japan.
Groom him for Japan.
Yeah, to groom him for New Japan. So we brought in Daniel Bryan, and then... the foundation of the dojo was that it was us. And then from then, I think later on, Dave Marquez came on as an office worker, and he started doing some scouting at an NWA show, and that led to Finn Balor being brought in. And but the idea was, it was a parallel, because there were no learning excursions to the United States anymore. And a big thing in Japanese wrestling is, young boys come up, they train, they debut, and then they're sent on a learning excursion. Liger was sent to Mexico and the United States, or Mexico and Canada.
England and
Canada. Hashimoto was sent to Canada.
Mm-hmm. Calgary, Stampede Wrestling was a
Stampede
big
in Calgary,
place.
Yeah. And that's a big part of the training. So after they come back from these excursions, they come back these more complete performers, and then they're kind of given a little steam behind them.
Plus, they're sent away as young boys.
Yeah,
and
when
they come
back,
men. Yes, they're men, yeah.
They go on a great pilgrimage, a warrior's journey. It's a very romanticized process. And it's actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
But, and so they didn't really have that in the States anymore, because there was no territories anymore. Mm-hmm. So they would send groups of young boys over. And like I said, the two special projects were Lyoto Machida and Shinsuke Nakamura.
But Machida, not for New Japan?
Lyoto was more for Inoki office, because
who does
they were grooming him to be a fighter.
Gotcha.
But, of course, Inoki wanted him to have some pro wrestling appeal. Mm-hmm. Lyoto, I think, you know, just wanted to fight. And I don't blame him, because it worked out well for him, you know.
So when they bring all the Japanese guys over, are they living at the dojo as well?
So yeah, we had an apartment. It was in Santa Monica. So the deal was, the Americans actually lived at the dojo. So it was like Brian and not Ricky and Rocky, but we had a few people, other guys there who would live at the dojo. Sarah Del Rey, who's now a head trainer at the Performance Center, she was also a dojo alumnus. so they would live at the dojo and train every day, and you know, were kind of responsible for keeping it up and stuff. And then the Japanese would come in, they'd have an apartment for them, and they had a couple of apartments. So one would be for the regular young boys, and then there would be like a second apartment for either, like, you know, a guest New Japan trainer with like Makabe or Lyoto or Shinsuke.
Would you ever take the Japanese guys out? Was that part of your...
All the time.
Where would you guys go?
Mostly around LA and Santa Monica.
Yeah.
You know, just like, because I mean, honestly, it's a rough, I mean, the dojo sessions and how they run stuff, you know, we'd still run a Japanese style. So it was a rough go. So, but I mean, what the Japanese way is, whatever you temper with, you know, however hard you work, well, you party, you know, a little bit harder, blow off steam. So we take them out, have a great time. And I mean, it was funny. So when Shinsuke first signed with the WWE, everybody was posting all these pictures of them and Shinsuke together. Like, oh, I met him here. And I have tons of pictures of me and Shinsuke together. Unfortunately, it's all of me and Shinsuke like blitzed in different parts of the world. Like pictures are really not fit for public consumption. So I couldn't really post anything in support.
He's a total rocker, isn't he?
Oh, he's a rock star. Yeah. He's about it. Like, he just wants to get out there and have a good time.
When I had him on my show, which was funny, because I told Vince that I had him on my show, he goes, "You speak English?"
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, he speaks really good English. But all Shinsuke was talking about is he just wants to go surfing.
He does. And you know, when we did the Australia tour, he surfed in damn near every town that was on a coast.
NXT Australia.
Oh yeah, yeah, it was great. It was awesome, because he'd run in and he'd get there, and then like I'd see him like frantically like clicking around his phone, like, what are you doing? He's like, looking for a surf shop, you know, like he'd find a store, he'd get a board
and go
and hit out, and it was just, he had a blast.
You're an island kid, a California kid.
I could appreciate it. I was
like, you surf?
I can bodyboard. I can't surf anymore.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, because I lived in Huntington Beach. It was Surf City USA. I
mean, all the time, yeah.
Yeah, you skip second period, you go surf. That was how it worked out, you know?
Like, you know a place called the Second Floor in Huntington Beach?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I hang out there all the time with Shadows from Avenged Sevenfold.
Yeah,
I've never been to the Second Floor where I didn't pretty much pass out in the seat somewhere. I don't know if what's in that in
it's,
the booze
it's
there.
The vibe or...
Yeah. You know, close to the ocean.
Yeah, it's seawater. Yeah, it's sea air.
That's what it
that
was.
That sweet briny sea air gives that sailor's headache.
The briny sea air. Is the Enoki Dojo still there?
No. I think it closed a number of years ago. But in all fairness, it was kind of an experiment.
Mm-hmm.
But it's funny how many people that were there went on to like really achieve pretty monumental height.
Just those names that you gave right there, on the short list.
Yeah, and I mean, and it's just it's something that it's funny to see them where they are now because I mean everybody that pretty much set foot in that place, you know, went on to greater things.
Mm-hmm. Were you working in New Japan?
No, never.
Yeah, that's weird that they wouldn't have brought you.
And like
in.
I said, because I was an Enoki office, I wasn't New Japan. That's part of that weird hierarchy.
Yeah, you're
of,
disqualified.
Yeah.
You were working for 01, though.
Yeah, 01, which was Hashimoto's company.
Did you ever work with Hashimoto?
All the time.
You guys are very similar body type.
Yeah,
sideburns.
Yeah, hell yeah. He taught me sideburns are to be embraced and loved. No, he was kind of like my first like big boss as far as in the business. And like he's a guy that like he taught me a lot in presence because like you don't really get it. I think when you're coming up as a wrestler, you don't really understand how much presence really means in when you're out there in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a guy that like if you saw him outside the ring you thought he was a jolly happy like chubby business guy who just get you know
chubby Elvis impersonator.
Chubby Elvis chain smoked you know like whatever but then he'd get in the ring and he'd transform into something completely different. And that audience it was tangible in the audience like this vibe that he gave off and like you know it's funny like they call me the Destroyer now. I mean that was like you know he was the King of Destruction. That was his original nickname.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're out there and you were in there like he was the King of Destruction. So it made me realize like there's a lot of nuanced points that he brought out to me really early in my career that like really resonated and made sense as far as like how to carry yourself in a ring and how to exude a certain persona about yourself.
Just through the course of this conversation, I can see it. I never noticed before, but we just happened to mention that. It's that there is some Hashimoto in you.
Oh, I'm sure there is. I mean, I've been kicked in the head by that guy too many times for there not to be.
God, his kicks are the worst. I've seen him a couple times. The stomp off the ropes.
It was rough.
Double stomp in the stomach. That's a squirter.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to squirt some Hershey squirts there. And then the kicks to the chest are just so strong.
Yeah, they were baseball bats. They were no fun.
What did he pass away from?
I think a brain aneurysm.
Something, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, how hard those guys go, though. I mean, it's just like if you take like the atypical workaholic and then you couple it with our lifestyle, lack of rest, sleep, traveling all the time, and the bumps and the bruises, it's over there, it was a cocktail for just that happening. I think.
Yeah,
I think
and you can see that with a lot of the guys that had that. You know what I mean?
Especially later on in their careers. I mean, it gets rough.
Did you where were you at when you finally found out you were getting the call to come up to the WWE? Was it something that had been brewing for a while, or was
it was kind of like the? I think at a certain point, it kind of became like an unspoken thing. And then I remember, I want to say, going. Probably after Toronto and Takeover Toronto, it was mentioned to me. I was like, "Hey, listen, there's probably going to be some opportunities for you elsewhere." And elsewhere, you know, it's like,
"What am I getting fired?"
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Antarctica? What are you talking about? Yeah. You know, so just be ready. So I was like, "All right, cool." So I mean, just kind of played it by ear from there. And then I really didn't learn about the official debut until probably a day before the Rumble, and then the kind of plan was laid out to me. So,
which was the day after the Rumble, right?
No, the day before the Rumble, they're kind of we did the Takeover.
Okay, right.
Which I wasn't on, and then it was kind of like laid out to me, like, "Hey, this is what you're doing here this weekend." So,
but I can't remember. Did you?
And then I debuted the day after the Rumble.
Yeah, the Rumble. Right. Yeah, you weren't actually in the Rumble because I remember everyone was all pissed off. Like, "There's no Samoa Joe in the Rumble, and so and so didn't win. This all sucks.
Yeah, everything's I hate everything."
And then the next day, yay!
Which is just it's kind of surreal, just kind of being on the other side of that, like on the outside looking at that, like just like. all right, you know.
Yeah, to know that people were expecting you.
Yeah. So I was like, all right, cool. I didn't really realize, but okay.
Yeah. But that's the thing, like, when you're in NXT, I mean, the fan base there is so large, especially amongst hardcore fans. Mm-hmm. Like, they knew exactly what you were doing the whole time, just waiting for the big...
Yeah. And I think that's part of the... kind of the fun connection of NXT to here, because it's just like it builds that anticipation, you know. So
when did you have your first meeting with Vince?
I don't know, we haven't really had a sit down meeting yet. You know, we talk in passing, and like, but I'm real like, I'm not big on like having real long drawn out conversations, and I guess maybe that's my detriment. Like, I'm really like, I'll show up and be like, hey, what do we need? All right, cool.
Right.
And then I'm out the door, like, you know, like, yeah, let's go get it done. Like, so, but you know, I think like things move really, really fast. So, I mean, we still have yet to have that big sit down meeting yet.
Which is good. It must be liking what you're doing so far.
Yeah, I guess. I heard if you do have a meeting, normally 9 times out of 10, it's not a good thing.
Compliments aren't at a premium.
Yeah. And I've learned that too. So I'm not.
If you're in trouble, you'll hear about it very briefly. The one thing I really liked what they did with you is when you came in was you started wearing a suit. You know that kind of changed the vibe of your character.
Which was funny because like I remember leading up to that, I was like, oh man, should I have a suit? I just in the back of my head, I was just thinking about it, like, should I probably have a suit? And I'm like, oh, they'll tell me. They tell me if I needed a suit. So the following week after I debuted, I was pondering that question, and inevitably I went, no, they would have called me by now. They would have told me. And then I get to the TV and Vince is like, does he have a suit? And it's like, no. It's like, get him a goddamn suit, you know. So it was like I ran out with one of the stagehands and got fitted, and we paid Svetlana, this lovely lady. Like, I mean, you know, normally she's used to doing like a week for alterations. It was like we kept throwing money at her till she was just like, all right, I'll have it done in 2 hours, you know, like,
that quickly. Yeah. Where'd you go get the suit?
We just went to the mall. We just found some like clothier store and just like got the suit all done real fast.
Classic WWE, right? We need a suit. Sure. When do you need it? In about 2 hours.
Yeah. And to the stagehand's credit, it was awesome because he's just like, we really need this done today. It's going to take me like a whole day. And then he just kept like dropping 20s until finally she's like, oh, maybe I can get something by like 8 o'clock.
Seven,
we're for a segment, you know. Like,
six.
And, all right, 2 hours. You got it.
Were you happy with the response that you got on your first night?
Yeah. It was pretty trippy, man. It was good. I think, you know, we got what we set out to accomplish.
Who did you attack? Was it
Seth?
Seth, right. And I think you beat me up the next week.
Yeah, I think I got you the next week. And...
yeah, you got me, man. You got me. But that's what I like. We've never been in the same locker room before. Met in passing a few times.
Yep.
But it's cool to have you here because you're a lot like me. You mentioned, like, what do you need? Let's make it work. If there's a question, I'll ask it. But if not, some of the guys here are not like that. We've put together some matches where there's...
we've talked about that in depth. I think there's something to be said for artistry and for being creative, and there's something to be said for getting the job done. And I think I try to strike that balance where it's like,
yeah, and going over things too much.
Yeah.
Analyzing.
And I think you lose a little bit of the organic feel of it. I think the roughness of certain things gets lost in the shuffle when it's too rehearsed.
Mm-hmm.
And, even as a musician, like, you know, some of the best things you'll ever hear will come out of a jam session, and it'll have which has a direction and it has a mission, but there isn't necessarily a path kind of drawn out. So I kind of prescribe to that school of wrestling.
But that's also the confidence of knowing that you're, can do it, you can get the job.
Yeah. And that's a big point. Cause it's like, you look around, I'm like, I'm in a ring with you, with Hunter, Fergal, Kevin, Sammy.
Yeah.
I forgot who our other tag team partner was.
Seth was one.
It's been a big mix. We keep mixing people in and out. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if you can't get it right with these people in the ring, then you're probably not going to get it right ever.
I do like that. Like, I think I would love it if every show there was one or two matches that they just flip flop right before you go out, even at the highest level, even the main event.
Yeah, just be like, hey, let's just do this,
and
again.
Because I love the calling it in the ring element, but unless you're forced to do it, no one really does it. You know?
Well, because it's too chaotic. Like. Yeah. It's funny. I think at this point, even too, like, I'm at the point where it's like, I would, like, you never want it to, but if it did blow up in your face, like, it's like, ah, well, at least we gave it a shot, you know.
It's a little bit of a lesson for you. So I want to talk to you a little bit about WrestleMania. You were there. We watched the Hardys' entrance on our underneath the curtain or underneath the stage.
Yeah, staring at the audience.
Staring at the audience. Yeah, at the back of the audience. When you were a kid, were you a big WWE fan?
I was. I don't want to say I was a fanatic, but I was definitely a fan. And it was funny because it was one of the few things me and my father could watch together. Like, we had different tastes in sports and teams. We had different tastes in television shows, everything else. But WWE was probably the one thing that, like, on a Saturday morning or, like, a Monday night, Monday evening, like, we could watch together.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, completely through, like, nothing said,
getting
like,
an end,
comfortably, you know, right. Where it was like, you know, he didn't have some opinion about something. I was like, oh, what are you talking about? You know, like, or we'd argue or fight about something. So, yeah, it was funny. I think that was kind of like the weird, like, unifying thing that, like, I dug about WWE.
That it could bring your family together, yeah. Right? Were you, did you watch WrestleMania every year?
I think I watched WrestleMania most years.
Yeah.
When I got in the business, like, it's funny. You get this, like hardened shell, like, oh, I can't be watching all these events. Like, it's just, it's all, you grow out of it eventually because you're like, no, you should watch whatever because it's good to watch everything you can. But it's like when you first get started, no, I can't watch that. I'm a wrestler now and all this stuff. So, but it's funny because I go back now and I watch some of the stuff and I realize, damn, I shouldn't really miss that. That was pretty awesome.
Because I was always like the type of guy, like if I really wanted to go to WWE and let's say they had turned me down or something, mm-hmm. I'd be like, fuck it, I'm not watching it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to watch, forget it.
Ugh.
No, I don't mind watching those guys. Yeah. Forget it, you know? And then finally go back, I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, I'll check it out later.
Who are your favorites when you were a kid?
So, I probably bring them up consistently. I really dug Arn Anderson when I was a kid.
Wow.
I did. Of all the people. Like, it was just weird. I always thought he had cool stuff that, like, nobody else really did. And, like, just his movement was really, like, really explosive and really, like, you know, because for the most part, you know, he kind of played at times like an undersized, like, you know, heel and, you know, bumped around a bunch. But then he'd have these moments, like the spine buster, it'd come out of nowhere and just
He was a lot better, I think, than what the role that he was given, maybe, because he was always part of the horseman. And
I think that was it, too. I think because he was, like, he was relegated to this, like, the enforcer.
Right.
Which, you know, as we know in this business, is a silent, you know, shut up and do a couple cool things here and there. But he always kind of transcended the role somehow, some way, and got over regardless. So I don't know. Maybe I could pick that up when I was younger, but he was somebody who resonated with me. I think I liked Ricky Steamboat just for cultural purposes. For some reason, you just thought he was, like, Polynesian.
From the islands, yeah.
But the other thing I could never understand, too, which is funny as a Samoan, is just, like, all Samoans and or Polynesian wrestlers always had some, like, form of martial arts skill. So I remember as a kid, that was kind of like when I started doing judo, it was just like, well, you know, the Samoan SWAT team's out there throwing cross chops and stuff. I better learn how to get some martial arts here. Yeah. Up my game.
Well, and you're also a rare Samoan that's not related to any other Samoans.
Yeah, real rare.
You're like the only one.
I think I am. Now, here I am, definitely.
That's weird.
Yeah, but it's cool. The family's definitely embraced me. I've been off a few times, and he's always awesome. You know, like, it's always good to see Pops and Sika. Sika's hilarious. Like, he reminds me a lot of my uncles. And it was funny, at the Hall of Fame, we were sitting kind of like middle row and just, you know, for the whole thing. And then Ata Maivia, like, comes over. She's like, oh, no, come sit over here. And, like, you're not going to say no. So
that's Rock's mom. Yeah.
So then you end up like, we end up like front row and, like, you know, sitting there. And it's like Rome's like four seats down from us. And it's just like, oh, hey, what's that? And then the only thing I could think of is like, oh, man, I bet people are watching this right now. It's like, man, they're racist. They put all the Samoans in one row. Like, you got to keep them all together. It's like,
well, that's the thing, too, because everyone claims to be related. I remember we went to Germany and Nia Jax was there, and I had a couple of drinks. I was in her face. You are not related to The Rock. She's like, no, I really am.
No, she
really legit is. But I was like, no, you guys all say that you're related. You're not related. She goes, I'm telling you, I really am. And then she told me the whole lineage. She's like, oh, sorry.
Yeah. I'll call him right now.
Yeah. Okay. So, but for your whole career, I mean, the WrestleMania is the peak.
Yeah.
For a performer, was it hard for you to be there and not be on the show?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think there was ideas throughout the day, whatever. But
trying to get that run-in money.
Yeah. You know the deal. Like I said, it's like sitting at the Super Bowl and watching it being played. And
right.
You're like, oh, I can't play because.
No one picked you.
But yeah. I mean, getting a chance to not so you're not on the show, but you're getting a chance to kind of see the whole machine at work. How was that after being in the business for so long?
I think it gave me a kind of a greater appreciation for how much production and how much like planning goes into something like a WrestleMania. Because I think it's something that's kind of underscored a lot, because like when you talk about especially WWE, the efforts and the things that they do to make us look cool kind of go above and beyond. I mean, that ramp was
unbelievable.
That's inconceivable in any other, like you can't name me a concert, and I've been to a lot of like really highly produced, like crazy concerts, and a lot of them pale in comparison to what went down to WrestleMania.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, I mean, from a technical standpoint, from how much production, how the lighting rigs, the ramp, the pyro. I mean, there's not a rock show in the world. I mean, I dare say, you know, Kiss doesn't put on that much production.
Not like that.
You know, so it's like you get this crazy appreciation, especially during the week, about how much goes into the planning of it, how much goes into the execution of it. Getting a whole city to be about an event is a lot harder than you think it is, and they do it every year. So I mean, it's like this is probably my third WrestleMania where I've kind of been around the environment. You know,
oh, really? Obviously.
Well, because like last year NXT. With NXT, but even the year before that, when I was kind of signing, I was in talks, so I was invited to a few meetings, and I was in and around the area, and so I get to see it from kind of like all views, from the outside, from the inside, and from, you know, being behind the scenes, and it's a pretty incredible effort.
It's one of those things like we don't even realize it too. Like I saw some pictures back from my entrance, and I posted one on Instagram this week, and I called it like Skittles Jericho, because there's so many colors on this stage. Because like you said, we walk out and the ramp is, you know, whatever it was, 500 feet long.
It's ridiculous.
But when you get out there and you see the shot behind, well, there's suddenly there's green and yellow sign, and there's a red roller coaster, and there's a gray giant list.
You walking down the ramp, you can't take it all in.
No, you can't.
It's impossible.
You don't even know what's going to be there, you know? And then you see it back, like you said.
And then the giant ring on top of the thing that you don't know what it's doing.
I didn't even know
there was a giant ring up there until like later on in the program. I'm like, oh, there's a giant ring up on the top of the rig? Oh, that's cool. You know,
but let's talk about you mentioned about the marketing of Samoa Joe. Even with your music, is that something that was just given to you? Did you have any input in that?
So the original music was like I'd kind of thrown out some samples and some ideas, and they came back with this original music.
Based on what? Like what kind of ideas did you have?
I remember it was Hunter kind of calling me. He's like, can you just give me some ideas, some genres, and some stuff like that you dig, and we'll work from there. So I kind of told him some of my past themes. So one of them was Faith No More, and Booyah Try was Another Body Murdered from, you know, some soundtrack. And then another one was Mama Said Knock You Out by LL Cool J. And, you know, I just kind of gave him all these things and said, well, you know, work with that. And so they come up with this music, and I get to my NXT debut, and he lets me listen to it probably a couple hours before the show. And I'm like, yeah, I guess, you know, like, cause you know, and I'm used to music needing like a lot of production, you know, just from people I know in the business and everything. So I'm just like, yeah, we're just going to run with it. Cause I mean, we're debuting and it's great. You know, once again, let's just get the job done type of deal.
Right.
But when I heard the music, I was like, you know, afterwards I'm like, I don't really dig it. And I remember Hunter came up and he's like, you don't really dig your music. I'm like, no, I don't. You know, and then he goes, okay, give me a sample of what you want. So I gave him a few samples, and one of them was, Pharoah Monch track that I had assigned.
Pharoah Monch.
It's called Simon Says, and it's just real heavy. And I used to use the intro all the time. It was basically the old Toho Godzilla intro slowed down. And then they looped it in this, so I kind of gave them that. And then I remember CFO probably within a couple days had like, oh, this is perfect. And then next thing I know, like they had the new track out.
What a great call! Like I was thinking, at first it sounds like a cruise ship leaving the dock, or is it a big giant tuba? But no, that's totally it. The Godzilla. Yeah.
It's literally that. Just, you know, mixed out a little bit and redone. So
what a great call. Where did you get that idea from? Are you a big fan of those movies or something?
I love Godzilla movies. And then the first time I heard that track, and this was, well, I don't know, I think it came out in like 90 something or other, I loved the track and I wanted to use it. The problem was the vocals were just horrible for a wrestling show, like an indie wrestling show, like, because I didn't just work like the hardcore crazy. And he's like, you know, every once in a while I'd have like some family in Indiana, and then the chorus is like, you know, get the fuck up. And it's like, Simon says, get the fuck up, throw your, it's just like, oh man, you know, like,
can't
it,
be using that.
That doesn't really resonate well with the kids and the family. So,
right.
Yeah, the Elks Lodge wasn't really about that one. So, so I could never really use it, but it was funny. I ended up using the intro mixed into a bunch of themes that I did have later on.
What's your favorite Godzilla version movie?
I think my all time, it's probably the second Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla. So I'm more of a Mechagodzilla guy, to be honest. Like, wow. Robot Godzilla was like, I always thought he was way cooler.
Which is what, that's like late 60s, early 70s era, right?
Because I was like, it was funny. It would be like Saturdays, it would be like pro wrestling during the day, be Superstars, and then Sunday evening, it would either be like Kung Fu Theater or like Godzilla flicks.
Did you ever used to watch Ultraman?
Oh yeah, Ultraman with the whole deal, yeah.
Because they would use a lot of those type of creatures.
Yeah,
like Ultraman.
Total like knockoff.
Kind of like a Power Rangers type thing.
Then there was like Gamera, which was like the knockoff Nuclear Turtle Godzilla.
Yeah, there was Mothra.
Yeah.
Giant moth, immortalized in the famous Canadian heavy metal band Anvil's song, Mothra.
Of the same name.
I remember I popped huge the first time I went to FMW, and they had Ultraman. There was a Mexican guy who's now
Who was actually Ultraman.
Yeah. Yes, he's now Damien 666, but he was Ultraman. I was like, oh my gosh, I used to watch Ultraman.
Tell me he gets bigger sometime during the match.
Godzilla's one of those things, every couple years they try and make a new one.
Yeah.
A major motion picture, major budget one. Kind of missed the mark a lot of times.
Yeah. Well, I think it's because the newer incarnations, they tried to make it something that it wasn't. And Godzilla movies aren't really about, like, the interplay in the stories. It's about a giant monster kicking over a city.
Right.
I mean, you don't go there to see, like, oh, what is the emotional impact on the residents of Tokyo?
Yeah.
Like, I don't care. Keep running. Like,
what does Matthew Broderick think of this?
Oh, what science is behind this crazy nuclear lizard?
But that's another thing, too, is the fact that in perfect tradition, I say this about wrestling all the time, the greatest heels always turn baby face because they're so cool.
Yeah.
And Godzilla is another perfect example of that. Yeah, because
he started out a heel. He started out he destroys Tokyo.
Yeah.
And he was a real political animal when you think about it, because it was like he was a protest against the nuclear bombs
in the 50s.
Yeah, it was a very anti-Western sentiment. Like, Godzilla was very representatory of like America and what they did, how they ravaged Japan with their bombs and their culture. And then, like, he was so cool that he actually he turned it back around, and he was the great savior of Japan and defender of the right.
And then they have to find other monsters to fight him.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, now they got to find other heel monsters. Godzilla.
But that's, I'm sure you're one of the few guys that when you hear the French metal band Gojira.
Yeah, Gojira.
You know what
exactly
it means, right?
About.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what is kind of a name is that? Well, it's actually the original pronunciation of Godzilla in the Tokyo Toho films.
Yeah. Nerd.
Just a few more questions. I was going to ask you before, when you're doing NXT and you're doing TNA and Ring of Honor and all these places, what's the difference in people recognizing you after being on WWE TV for a week, 2 weeks, a month?
It's I will say this, and like in like around where I live, it was, you know, it's you know the deal. It's like you kind of in your same circles, those people know you.
Right.
Go, hey, there you are. But I definitely notice as we travel more, it's hard to go anywhere without being like, hey, what's up?
You can't hide.
You can't walk streets anymore without having like a photo session.
Or get to the airport. I always love the mobs of fans at the airport. Like, how do you know?
That seriously, there needs to be need to do a documentary and like tag along to these guys. Go, I want to know how you guys know where we're gonna be.
That's a great That's a good call. Because if I had to pick you up, right? And I didn't know your flight. And if I called Delta and said, hey, my friend Joe's coming in, you know, from Tampa.
Yeah.
What time is his flight landing? What number is it? There's no way they would give it to me.
No.
That's against the rules, sir. That's against
the
law.
And, like, we know each other.
Right, exactly.
But these guys,
Somehow,
some way,
every time, know exactly
no matter
where
it's at. Like we're in Providence, and Providence has an airport, and somehow, some way, somebody knew that I was flying into Boston, and they were there and to meet us. And it's like
how do you know this? I've been on flights that have been canceled that I changed myself because I was too hungover to make it.
That's what was scary to me was I think probably after my third week here, I had to change a flight, and I came in at night because I had some stuff to do. And I get in 8 o'clock at night going, for sure, I'm not on the same flight as everybody else, so I know it's going to work out. And lo and behold, there was two guys sitting there with me with action figures at like 8:30 at night. And I was
how do you do this? So if you're listening, somebody, tweet me at Talk Is Jericho and let us know, how do you find this out? You don't have to give your name.
Yeah. We just want to know what we just, we're not trying to shut down the networks. We just want to know how the whole thing works.
Do you know somebody there or something?
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Question out of the blue, what's your favorite thing to eat at Burger 21? I go to Burger 21 with my daughters. Yeah. We're going to the daddy daughter dance, and the guy's like, "Do you need anything else?" I'm like, "I'll have some napkins." And I hear this voice go, "I want some napkins too." And I look over, and it's like, "Who's this son of a Joe?" Hey, yeah.
I like it. You did turn around very, very sternly, like, "Who's this son of a bitch trying to get over?" Yeah. I'm over here with my daughter. Oh, hey, man, what's up? How you doing? It's good to see you.
All right, that's a great place, though.
Yeah, it is.
Shout out to Burger 21 in Tampa, Florida.
Chef run joint, local
run. There's local a couple spot of them in Tampa. I think they have a few, but I'm always the OMG gluten-free.
You do the OMG gluten-free?
Ketchup and bacon only.
Dude, I'm actually a big fan of the salmon burger there.
Ooh.
Yeah, normally I'm not a big, like if I like fish, I like just fish on its own.
All right.
Processed into a patty, but he actually does a pretty good, awesome job with it.
There you go. Yeah. That's the Samoa Joe order. Do you think that in the cards here at some point or not, would you like to have a match against Brock Lesnar?
Absolutely.
I think that'd be a great match.
I think, I've stated a lot, you know, and I think, you know, I think it's something the fans want to see, and I'd love to get into it with Brock.
When you're looking with legit, like, that's the thing, like, you've just basically started here, you know, a couple months ago. One of the things I loved, like I said, you were my favorite wrestler in TNA when you were doing the pay-per-views. I used to order the pay-per-views just to watch you. Was when they were saying Joe is going to kill you, you had that style. You still do, but it was really intense and you're very believable, which is now the same here. And not a lot of guys have that style. And when you're working with Brock, as you know.
Oh, he's very intense.
It has to be believable.
It's got
to
be believable. You know? And I think that's part of it, too. I mean, I've had the really great fortune of working with some really legendary talent in my time. Kobashi, Misawa, Angle.
Wow, you worked with Misawa?
I did. One of the few in singles, the main event of Budokan.
Was it All Japan?
No, it was Noah.
Noah, okay, yeah. You worked Noah.
And, these are guys who, you know, go in there and they try to tear your head off, you know, no matter what you want to say about what we do. No, these guys are for real. You know,
too. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think Brock is very much akin to those people. And I think it's something that I think we could get in that ring and make some really, really
make some money. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, talking to you, I've never had the opportunity to ask somebody this, between Kobashi and Misawa, who are critically acclaimed as two of the greatest of all time. Which one did you like working with? Can you choose which one you like better?
I definitely would say Kobashi.
Wow.
Misawa is a force unto his own, and I could see why. Kobashi had this ability, though, to kind of like draw emotion out of a crowd. Where like
his facials, right?
Yeah, and just and everything he did, it just looked like when he was underneath, he looked like he was just being flayed alive out there, and he could just like really pull and get the crowd behind him. Misawa is very stoic.
Yes.
And he's kind of like, he's more of a straight man to that. You know what I mean? Like, he just played a different role. And they're both awesome. But, I mean, of the two, I'd probably say Kobashi.
Absolutely. Yeah, I can see that. Like you said, there was much more of a facial game there with him. You know? Last question. What was your favorite match you had in NXT?
You know, I think it was the Mania match with Ferg where I got busted open. In Texas,
the before Mania or the takeover,
takeover for Mania.
Wow,
Or Finn, excuse me.
Yeah, you did get. What happened there?
It just was a happenstance thing, a quick little collision, and just he rubbed and just caught me just right. I think it might have been like even head on head, but he just got me just right and sliced me. It was because everything got thrown into disarray after that.
Were you knocked out or?
No, not at all.
Why was it thrown in disarray?
Just because the blood and
oh, yeah.
The trainers coming down and stopping and everything kind of changed, but it created this really crazy, rabid,
like we talked about earlier, something that wasn't planned.
This chaos that you can't really describe that just put the crowd on edge and you know what I mean? Like I guess I don't look at it from a technical standpoint, but just from the reactions and what happened and all the backstory. And I mean, there's stuff that people don't even know about that happened in that match, cause like when I'm busted open, of course in the back, they're like, we got to get you closed up. Just company edict,
Yeah, when you get cut open, they want you to stop the match and a trainer will come in and try and stop the bleeding.
And, I'm hearing the ref telling me this, and then I think we went to another thing, and we had worked it out and I had hip tossed Fergal, and he went over the barricade, and this is after I'm already busted open bleeding, and I go in a hip toss Finn over the barricade, and I look, and on the edge of the row is Stephanie, Linda, and the kids. And I busted open. I've almost thrown Finn onto the McMahon family. I'm getting in the back, and I'm just like, oh, great. So at that point, like, I realized, like, all right, well, you know, we can't do much worse than that. Let's get it going. So we just got all bets off, and we just kind of went through and kept going and got the match. I remember I walked in the back, and I started apologizing profusely because there's Hunter at the monitor, and Vince is right behind him, and I'm like, I'm really sorry. You know, you got to know that this wasn't intentional. This was a total accident. I didn't mean to, you know, and, oh, it's all right, it's all right. And they're, oh, it's fine. It's, you know, good stuff. And, like, the whole time I'm sitting there going, yeah, Linda's going to come back there. He almost killed us. You know, like.
After all the shit she's been through this company, I think that wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
did you actually have to stop the bleeding?
We got it decently stopped. So, God. I mean, at some point. But there was a bunch of stoppages in the match. But then the crowd were pissed because then, you know, of course, you know, I'm pushing off the trainer. But at the same time, like, you know.
That's the rule, man. You can't do that.
Yeah. And then the trainer, to his credit, it was hilarious because he walked up to me afterwards after he's sewing me up, and he goes, "Hey man, I just really want to thank you for, you know, not being too crazy out there." And I'm like, "Oh, of course, man. You know, hey, you're just trying to help me. I'm trying to do your job. I understand." And he goes, "Yeah, man, because the last time I had to seal somebody up, it was Brock, and he threw me damn near half across the arena." So I guess they told him, he's never worked with me, never spoken with me, anything. So you know, he's running down to ringside, the dock, and he's like, you know, he's like, "This guy looks like a psycho. Like, what's going on out there?" And like, so then, you know, I'm brushing him off, I'm pushing him off, and under my breath, I'm like, "Yeah, give me a second," you know, like, but at the same time, he's like waiting for any moment for me to like punch him in the face and like whip him over the guardrail. And he's just like, he goes, "I gotta admit, when I was running out there, I was really, really nervous. You were just going to murder me out there."
he's too laid back, bro.
Yeah.
So, thanks, Joe, for doing this. And no thanks to the son of a bitch,
that son of
security
a bitch.
Guy,
that mother
at the top of the damn railing here in Champaign, Illinois. If we see him, I'm going to say something to him.
I'm going to go buy him a carton, like a big pack of smokes. Maybe he'll finish himself off.
And on that note,
got a pending court case? Don't spend your money on fancy lawyers. Come on downtown and eat a bowl of Wild Jimmy's Forget Me Chili. It's scientifically proven by scientists that filling your tum tum with the meat chunks will put you into an untestifiable food coma. Hearing before Congress, I'd like to see them ask you a question while you're moving slow on my chili con carne. Hell, maybe it's a grand jury asking you about why you used recalled meat. A friend told me that happens. Well, there's nothing grander than my chili verde with shredded venison to make all those memories of cutting calls versus public safety go out the window if you were not complicit in those things. In fact, there's only two things I'm sure of. One, my chili's delicious. And two, it's so good you'll get to keep your children. Want to know more about it? You can check out the Team Tiger Awesome Show right here on the Jericho Network. Podcast One.
Leave it to Team Tiger Awesome, those whack jobs, to come up with a food product guaranteed to keep you out of court. Yeah, chili that puts you in a food coma so you don't have to testify or see a judge. I want some of that. So for more laughs like that from those guys, very talented, very funny, please check out the Team Tiger Awesome Show every Sunday on the Jericho Network. Subscribe at Apple Podcasts. Leave them all a 5-star rating and review. And also go check out the rest of the shows on the Jericho Network. Rock Talk with Mitch LaFon. He's got a great plethora of guests. Richard Marks this week, of all people. It was a really good show. Check it out. And don't forget about the Raven Effect. Raven is getting into his own. If you haven't checked out the Raven show, or if you checked it out when it first started, go listen now. It is absolutely hilarious. Raven is off his rocker, and he's really getting telling in-depth stories about the origin of Raven, his entire wrestling career. It's definitely worth a listen, as well as Killing the Town with Storm and Cyrus every Tuesday, Beyond the Darkness Monday through Friday, Scaring the Pants Off You, and of course our flagship show, Keeping It 100 with Conan every Thursday. And remember, we're just a few weeks away from the kickoff of the Fozzy Judas Rising Tour. King and Sons of Texas are coming along for most of the dates. You can get the tickets at FozzyRock.com, as well as all the VIP meet and greet tickets. We have the best VIP program in the business. You get to see a private sound check, make some requests, sing with the band, meet the band, meet me, get pictures, get autographs, do whatever the hell you want to do. And it all starts May 5th in Virginia Beach at the Lunatic Luau, 6th, The Revival in Canton, Georgia, 7th, Carolina Rebellion,
9, the Concourse in Knoxville, 10, Trixie's in Louisville, 11, the Rave in Milwaukee, 12, the Green Bay Distillery in Green Bay, 14, Northern Invasion, 16, a Diesel Club in Pittsburgh, 17, Chameleon Club in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, 18, 89 North in Pajog, New York, 19, House of Independence, Asbury Park, New Jersey, the Blue Fox in Winchester on the 20th, Machine Shop in Flint on the 23rd. Also, there's Morgantown, Virginia on the 21st at the main stage. 24 is the Forge in Joliet. 25, Foo Bar in St. Louis. 26, Rocklahoma. 27, River City Rock Fest in San Antonio. 28, BFD in Dallas at the Star Pavilion. It's going to be a huge tour. Come and check us out, FozzyRock.com, for all ticket info. Then we're headed across the pond to do the Download Festival with Aerosmith on June 11th. I'm going to be hosting the Metal Hammer Golden Gods Awards on June 12th at the O2 Arena in London. A couple tickets left for the show at Crawford Arms in Milton Keynes on the 13th. Maybe a possible surprise gig on the 14th. And of course, there's a few tickets left as well to the Words of Jericho live shows in Ireland, June 7th in Belfast, and June 8th in Dublin. So go to Ticketmaster.ie to grab one of the few remaining tickets for the Dublin show. The Belfast show sold out. So that's all of my shilling. My shameless plugs are over. I want to say thank you to all the great Talk is Jericho sponsors. You can find them all at podcast1.com. Just click on the Killer Deals button at the top of the page, then hit that Talk is Jericho button. Thanks to ddpyoga.com/Jericho, where you get 20% off the DDP Yoga app, all DDPY merch. Sax.com, go to saxunderwear.com/Jericho. Get 20% off your first underwear pouches. Thank you so much. Don't forget about Geico. Don't forget about TrueCar. And don't forget about listening to the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next and coming up Friday. Method Man, one of the biggest selling rappers of all time with the Wu-Tang Clan. He's a great guy. He's a big Chris Jericho fan, and he's a tremendous host for the new show on TBS called Drop the Mic, which is where I met him. I went to his house in Staten Island. We talked all things Wu-Tang, all things Method Man, talked about all of his acting gigs, talked about Biggie Smalls and Tupac and West Coast versus East Coast, etc., etc. Do not miss the Method Man. In the meantime and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs. We will see you on Friday, and here's a big yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.